Hello, I'm Lillian Grace, author of several personal development novels for the conscious family. I'm about to have a conversation with Carla van Biljon, a relationship specialist in South Africa, who recently read my novel for adults, Wanted Greener Grass. Carla originally studied theology and then became a certified DeMartini Method facilitator and clinical imago therapist. She's a wife and mother who dedicates her time to helping people form meaningful relationships. And this is whether with yourself, your partner, your children, your family, your friends, or your colleagues. For those who don't know me, in the wake of writing this novel about relationships, my own life was turned upside down when a new man turned up. I wasn't looking for anybody and was at that time celebrating my 29th anniversary with my much-loved partner. But 14 months later, I married that new man. It's been an extraordinary journey. We'll no doubt touch on some of that in this conversation. So welcome, Carla.
Thank you so much, Lillian. Thanks for this opportunity to speak to you about relationships.
Yes, indeed. And I really like the modern slant on an interview being actually a conversation rather than an interview, because it's clear to me that we've got lots to ask each other and learn from each other.
Yes, definitely, yes. It's exciting to learn from each other as we go along on these journeys of relationships.
Yes, it is. So I'm delighted that we've met. I've been interested in both Havel Hendricks and his imago therapy and in Dr. John DeMartini's material for some time. So your husband, Emil, is coordinator of programs at the DeMartini Institute. Is that right?
Yes, yes. We actually met in my final years of theological studies. In the beginning of my last and final year, I met him, and it almost felt like complementary to my studies to got introduced to the work of DeMartini through him. And as soon as I finished with my theological studies, I moved on to the DeMartini Institute to learn more on human behavior. And at that time, we both used this work so much for our own relationship as we went through our own things. And when we decided to start our own family, we moved back to Johannesburg from Cape Town. And that's when he started to work at the DeMartini Institute, helping people to get them out and get them attending the breakthrough experience to also have the worth of what this work does for relationships and your life. Yes. So it's a privilege to actually have a husband who also does the work, and that we can constantly check in with each other in the relationship.
I'm thinking maybe a mixed blessing, a blessing and a curse, because he won't let you off the hook, right? So where you've got
definitely
challenges.
It's so funny when people come to the breakthroughs, or when we're at a seminar at the DeMartini Institute, people say, oh, it must be so wonderful that you and your husband do the work, and I'm battling to get my partner to get into it. And I tell them, listen, you don't know what you're asking for, because it is challenging as well, because you really, it's like, you know, the child game where you play hide and seek and you've got a place where you block yourself. And Emil always say, like, there's no more 1, 2, 3, block myself. You can't get out anywhere, because once you've got this work, you have to take accountability to do what's needed. So yes, it's for sure challenging at sometimes in a relationship as well. But luckily, we've got the tools to work through it.
Yes, I can imagine all of that. So please share, for people who are not familiar, a little bit more about the DeMartini method in relation to relationship counselling, and also imago therapy, Havel Hendricks's approach.
So what I love about both of these methods and approaches is that they look at the relationship as a place for you to become whole again, because you are whole from the beginning. We as humans come into this world with every single part of ourselves, the niceness, the meanness, the kind, the cruel, all sorts of things. And as life goes along, we kind of lose some of these traits and stop using them, and we deny that we've got those traits. And what the relationship provides is a place for you to actually rediscover and acknowledge that we've got these traits within ourselves, and how your partner is the perfect person to show to you that lost part that you don't disown within yourself. And what I found so useful working with the DeMartini work, actually how I got into it, was in my last year of my studies, my sister's fiance committed suicide. And that completely threw my world around. It turned my world upside down because I couldn't understand how could someone on the brink of getting married and having this wonderful life ahead of him, how could he decide to take his own life? What made him feel so guilty and ashamed that he couldn't live anymore? And that's why I attended the first breakthrough experience. And since then, I got a deeper understanding of why do we behave the way that we behave? Why do we do and act certain ways? And from there on, I started incorporating the Demartini work in my work when I was still working in churches, where I used the Demartini work helping couples to identify their values. What is it that's most important to them in their lives? And how do they complement each other with their unique set of values? And in marriage counseling, how we look at that and how we go and see how the thing that irritates you most about your partner is actually serving you. And I also incorporated the Demartini work in grief techniques when I conducted funerals for people. And even in my sermons, just teaching people on human, basic universal laws of how we operate as humans and why we relate the way to people that we do relate. So using the Demartini work has immensely helped me to take it to another level to such a point that I'm actually working full-time now. I'm not in churches anymore, but I'm full-time helping people using the Demartini work and the Imago therapy to help them to understand where we come from, why we've got the almost like the fighting knots, the specific reason why some couples sit and have fights on the same things over and over again, and why it comes from your upbringing and the partner's upbringing and how that all comes together and how you really can actually sort it out and live with those challenges within your relationship, almost like a dance, to see there's times ups and downs in a relationship as well where you learn how to work through the challenges and not to try and eliminate the challenges, because that's where we actually grow the most. So, yeah, that's just a little bit of how I incorporate the Demartini work and the Imago work. I hope it explains a lot. You're more than welcome to ask me more on it if I haven't covered something.
Look, it's, to me, really interesting. I remember when I first read, what is the Havel Hendricks book? It's Getting the Love You Need, isn't it?
Getting the Love You Want, yes.
Oh, Getting the Love You Want, yes.
Yes.
And that was, I read that a long time ago before I came across Dr. Demartini's work, and I found it quite, you know, really compelling, very interesting, very transformational to appreciate that the people that you have closest to in your life, in particular your life partner, their traits are there as growth, to serve you, for growth, you know, to serve you. And I remember I've always thought that relationships are not about happiness, they're about growth. So, I've always found very interesting. And then, of course, Demartini's work with all the identifying of the individual traits that your partner or anyone else in your life has, that anything that plugs you in, A, you also have that trait, and B, it serves both of you. So, they're really both very rich and very useful modalities.
Definitely. And as you say, it just comes to mind now, Dr. Demartini always thought of when he talks about relationships, how we meet someone and we can't believe how similar we are. And his exact story saying, oh my goodness, we've got the same amount of arms and teeth and all of this. And you just see all the similarities. And you're so infatuated with this person because you just get along so wonderfully. And then comes the first challenge where you realize, oh my goodness, I'm actually not the same person. We're not the same. There's some differences as well. And at that point, that's where it gets confusing in a relationship to think, why did we get along so well in the beginning? And now all of a sudden things change. And that's such a necessary part in a relationship, to also learn almost that differentiation, to realize that we are different people, but together we also form a unit, and to use that relationship as the place to see where the differences that you've got is actually serving you to grow. There where you feel your partner is doing something completely the wrong way or a different way that you would not have done it, that's exactly the place for you to start growing and for you to learn from them.
Yeah. Yes. And you've now that you've been working as a counselor for a while, you're obviously getting some good results with your clients with using these principles. How do people in general respond to these ideas?
This is actually a very interesting question, and I can answer from many different ways. I remember having a previous conversation with you where I told you that it's still so interesting to see how couples have got this Hollywood fantasy of, and they lived happily after, ever after, and how they've got this idea that now that they all of a sudden have hit a moment where they've got a struggle or where they're fighting about something, that the main purpose of the relationship is to sort that conflict out and be conflict-free in a relationship. And to actually, when I work with couples, to teach them that you don't want that conflict to go away. You want that conflict in your relationship because that is the thing that makes you grow the most. So when I work with couples, what I see with them is that they do have this fantasy that as soon as we're going to get married, now our relationship is going to be fine. And then they realize, oh, after the marriage, the challenges comes in. And then they think, okay, let's just get a baby because then things will be better after that. And then as soon as you've got the baby, you've got another set of challenges. That really puts a lot of pressure on a relationship. And if you don't work on it, then if you don't invest your time in the relationship, of course, it's not going to work then. So the most inspiring thing for me to help people within a relationship is to help them to realize that what you've got, your relationship as it is already perfect. The fantasy of what you think the relationship should be or how it should be or how your partner should be, the fantasies that we put on our partners, is actually causing most of the disasters in our relationship and the biggest troubles within it. And what I love to do is to help the people to get back to what is in front of them, the actuality of what's happening within the relationship. And when you get to that point, you can see how the couple transforms and how they really experience unconditional love for each other, not with condition, not I'll love my partner as soon as they become like that. I'll love my partner as soon as they act like that way or whatever. When the conditions are out and it's complete unconditional love, you cannot deny that moment of reconnecting to each other and how that takes a couple to another level. So that's the blessing of what I get to do every day, to work with a couple in small moments of just giving them a moment and a small encounter of reconnecting again and realizing that the relationship is a safe place where you can be your complete self and your full self with all your parts, every single part of you, the nice and the mean.
That is great. It must be refreshing and a relief when people take off the burden of expectations that it has to be so ideal, you know, so unrealistic, and that they can just be themselves, and then that they can respect both themselves and their partner, or allow both themselves and their partner to have the freedom to have all of those aspects of themselves and to allow the challenge and conflict. Because I agree, years ago, teach a conflict resolution course, and the very first principle that was taught is that the purpose is not to eliminate conflict. We'll never do that. It plays an important evolutionary role.
Yes, definitely. And I remember when I was still doing my practical year in theology, as I was sitting with my mentor pastor, he told me how he speaks to couples just before they get married and like the first interview. And the most beautiful metaphor that he used was to say that a relationship is like the tracks of a wheel, of a car, where it's two separate tracks. But as long as you grow within yourself, then you'll stay together. The tracks can't almost like waver from each other if they go together. And that's also an interesting part of a relationship where you've got like the overdog and the underdog effect, where at some point, one person in the relationship might feel that they are a little bit more empowered and they kind of project onto the other partner and feel, but that one should empower themselves a little bit more and they need to step up the game in this way or that way. And how the underdog need that challenge to say, okay, listen, if I don't develop myself equally, I'm not going to be as attractive to my partner because there might be other people that's more attractive in that sense. And that little dance, how you learn as partners how to allow the other one to grow at their own pace, but also to challenge them enough to support them to say, okay, it's fine to grow at your pace, but also challenge them to say, I believe in you that you can be more than what you are right now and you can grow. And to give the freedom to each other to be a little bit disempowered that drives you to go be empowered again, and the other one again being empowered and allowing the other one in the place where they are to be and to grow. And that's actually if couples start to look like how I said with when I work with couples, they come in with this fantasy of Hollywood where everything is just going to be fine and we're just going to be together forever and live and love happily ever after. But if we change our perspective of a relationship as a place for you to become your most empowered self with the help of your partner, that shows you some places where you can grow. That's a complete different way to look at a relationship and almost like a journey, like an adventure to see, wow, this is really the place where I can grow and where I can become myself. But it does take hard work to get someone at a place where you can feel comfortable and safe to be that vulnerable person in that space within a relationship.
That is very true. And I understand what you're saying about the top dog and the underdog and the way that we take turns in the two roles, you know, as to who's calling the shots or who's
yes.
you know, who we're trying to fit in with or who's, it was definitely relevant for me in that I was often the one pushing for more experiences, more new things, you know, and that was one of the reasons that my partner and I started to diverge. So,
That's interesting that you mentioned that. Now, I remember when I just finished reading the book and you told me about your story right after reading the book. I feel this is definitely a story that all the readers or listeners have to hear. Would you love to share your story on how that part developed for you after writing the book?
I will, yes. All right, I was going to go to the book first and reveal what that's about because of the ironies that came about. So Wanted Greener Grass is about a couple whose relationship is a bit flat and unsatisfying, and the husband John goes to London, to England, for his father's funeral effectively. And his wife, Mia, who stays in Australia, feels that when he comes back, she's going to say to him, let's call it off. It's not working for us anymore. So, but while John is overseas, he has, you could say, some experiences because he learns things about his father that he hadn't known. He discovers that his father was quite an artist, a brilliant artist. And so he begins to wonder what there is to him that he doesn't know about because he's also living a less than fulfilled life. And so he says to Mia, to his wife, when I come home, I'm going to come back different. I'm going to be a different person. And so she holds off on this conversation about we should part ways to see what happens. And when he comes back, he is very different. But there are some significant differences that In the process of reinventing himself, he's presented both of them with quite a moral and ethical dilemma. So I don't want to give more of it away because obviously I want people to pick up the book and read it for themselves. But what was fascinating for me was that after just a week or so after I finished writing this book, a new man came into my life. And within 6 weeks of meeting him, I was at the same point that my character Mia is at the end of the book. And really questioning what I was going to do in my relationship because much as I loved my partner, we wanted slightly different things. So there's a little bit of the insight into my book and my journey. And essentially my partner and I went through quite a process in, for me, I had to do a lot of introspecting, a lot of listening to my intuition, a lot of I met with three different counsellors. I didn't know you at the time, Carla, but I met with three different counsellors and an astrologer and really deeply looked into the whole thing and ended up coming to the conclusion that I was complete in that relationship and it was time for me to have a new adventure, a new journey. And so even though there was still a lot of love and friendship and we were working together on my books and things like that, I made the decision to move on, and fortunately, his a very high class person who, despite his own pain in my decision, was able to recognize and understand why I was choosing that and to respect that and let me go. So, yeah, it's been a pretty intense journey.
It was so inspiring to hear your story. And I'm just thinking, like, for you, Lillian, when you got married to your husband, we stand there on the day and we say those words, we'll be together in sickness and in health until forever. But the reality is that we know that we can't predict what the future is going to look like. We don't know, are we really going to be with that one partner for the rest of our lives? And to embrace when a new opportunity comes along. And it just seems like you and your husband handled it in such a wonderful way to actually have each other's best interest at heart, to say, as you said, that even though it was painful for him at one point, he said that if this is truly your desire to move on to someone else, then he would love to give that to you to move on. And I can imagine it must have changed your view of relationships completely after having this transition in your life. So what was the most valuable thing that you've learned through this transition that you went through right after writing the book?
Well, that particular partner, my ex and I, had actually never married. We were a de facto couple, but we were both very monogamous, very committed, and I had thought I would be with him for the rest of my life. We were both familiar with Dr. DeMartini's work, and one of the stories that Dr. DeMartini tells about his relationship with his wife at the time, Athena, was of her becoming interested in somebody else. And they had a conversation about it, and Dr. DeMartini said to her, well, I think you should go out on a date with that guy and you should check him out. And if he is better for you than me, then you deserve to have him and I will step down. And I remember that my ex and I were both very inspired by that and impressed. That was really a demonstration of unconditional love. And so the other reason that Dr. DeMartini said that is because he knew that if he didn't give his wife the opportunity to check that other person out, she would forever have a fantasy in her mind that she could have been happier with that other person. And he would slip in her estimation. So he knew that unless his wife went and checked out that other guy and did a reality check, that it might not work out for them well from that point on. And so she did that, and she came back to him and said, okay, well, he's great on this and this and this, but he's not as good as you on this and this and this. And so I'm choosing to stay with you because I can see that you serve me better. You know, you're a better match. And I found that very inspiring. We both did. So when this whole thing occurred for us, my partner stepped up into that same space, you know, my ex, and he wanted to honor those sorts of values and principles and basically let me go to what we were terming my higher good, you know, like to an experience that would perhaps be greater for me at that time. And it was not easy for him. It was very, very difficult. And there was a lot of sadness and grief and anger and all sorts of emotional ups and downs in it, because one thing is making a decision, and the other thing from a visionary point of view, and the other thing is the reality when it catches up with you of what that means on a day-to-day basis as you start separating your lives and packing and, you know, doing all those things and moving apart and how the impact it has on children and all of that sort of stuff. So it was a very difficult journey. I would say that for me, the lessons in this have been around intuition, trusting my intuition, because when I met this man, I had a strong intuition to take my interest in him very seriously, and it made no sense and I didn't understand why at one level. And yet my decision to be with him, I made that choice to part from my ex and to go and be with this man before I'd even kissed this new man. You're like, there was no intimacy whatsoever when I made the decision. And it all happened after I, you know, started activating those changes. So that was a very big lesson for me about trusting my intuition. And the outcome since then of now having lived with this man for a year or so, you know, is that, that was right. It was a trustworthy decision. And so there was that. There was around taking more responsibility for what I wanted in relationship, because I wasn't as fulfilled as I wanted to be, and yet I had to respect my partner's choices, and he didn't actually want to co-create what I wanted. So I'd reached that point where I had to surrender and let that go and realize that it was probably never going to be exactly what I wanted because we didn't have the same vision for our relationship. So that was a big lesson for me, that love isn't enough. You know, you can have so much love, but if you actually want different things, then that is a valid reason to say farewell. So then with my book being called Wanted Greener Grass, when I wrote it, I was very clear in principle that there is no such thing as greener grass. And so that enabled me when I started to part ways and to move into a new relationship, even though the new relationship was very exciting and I was as infatuated as any person is when you fall in love, and you know, all of that was going on for me. But I also had at the back of my mind the reminder that there's no such thing as greener grass. Keep your feet on the ground, keep your eyes open, go looking for, you know, where are the drawbacks, be clear about them so that you have realistic expectations of this relationship. Yeah. And that you travel a steady, centered path. And that was just phenomenally useful to me, that perspective.
That is so interesting. As you're speaking now, I'm just thinking that writing the book with the awareness of that all relationships has got ups and downs. And we've got things that we like about our partner and we don't like about our partner. And actually then going through what you are writing in the book, it must have been an interesting journey to almost like see your life unfold after you've written the book and now to have the practical of it. It's almost like knowing all those theories in principle, but then going back to life and really apply it in your own life to sit down and do the work and to see that the relationship, whether it's moving on with a new relationship, there's going to be challenges in that one as well. Or whether you're staying with your partner, it's also going to be challenging. But either way, it's hard work. There's work to be done.
Yes, there is work to be done for sure.
Yes,
I completely agree. And so there were uncanny things that were, it was a true life imitating art kind of dynamic, and that was extraordinary to do that journey. Lots of aspects of this were extraordinary. I mean, one of the, not the least of which, was that at the time that I met this new man, I was recording a series of interviews on the topic of destiny, and one of the people I interviewed was Dr. DeMartini, and it was just bizarre because this man, if there was anything that felt destined, it was this man and this whole journey together. But Carla, tell me now, what did you enjoy about the novel, both as a woman, as a wife, and as a relationships counsellor? What did you get out of it?
Oh, Lillian, I'm getting goosebumps as you're asking me that question. I can't wait to share this part. I remember telling you that when I work with people as a parent, as I'm working with relationships, your relationship with your kids, with your partner, whatever. So I've got one book that I always refer to people when I work with parenting, and for them to understand a specific language and a new mindset and a framework from where we are going to work. And when I read your book, I told you, I am so excited about this book because now I've got my new best book to refer to people, to give to them, to understand the language of relationships. What I enjoyed so much about this book is how you masterfully wrote a novel, a story of a real person that you can associate with, that you can understand what she's going through in a relationship, or whether you're a guy or a woman reading this book, you can understand it's a real life experience going on in this book. And it's not a soppy romantic book with a happily ever after. It's a real life story with all the dirt of what relationships are about and all of that inside of it, and how we just go through life and the cycles of relationships. So what I loved about it is how the thing that I loved most about the main character, Mia, is how she realized at some stage that she's got bored in the relationship with her husband. As you said, that John went overseas after his father's passing, and she realized, does she actually want to be in the relationship further? And she starts blaming her husband, John, for all the things that he hasn't done, or he's not exciting enough and everything. And where she comes to the realization that actually I cannot blame everything on him. I haven't done a lot in my life for that. And that is one of the most beautiful basic principles of relationships that you've displayed there in the book, on how it's so easy to point to our partner one finger. But in the meanwhile, there's four fingers pointing back to yourself. And at some points where the thing that you feel like is scratching in your partner is the basic thing that's scratching within yourself. And how this character, Mia, realized, but she hasn't taken on her dream. She's been stopping her life to live the dream that she wants to live and do the things that she wants to do. And how she goes through this process of developing herself, having the courage to step into that person that she actually wants to be. And that's real life. That's where we cannot blame someone else. It's the basic principle of the DeMartini method, as we learned, is to the first thing that what you see in someone else and you resent within themselves, we have to go and see where are we actually doing the same thing. And that's a tough part in a relationship, to get to that point to say, okay, so I'm pissed off at my husband for doing this and this and this and this, and to really go take ownership and realize, I've got as much part in this whole dynamic, what's going on within the relationship, as he does. And that's the place where you really start to grow, when you take that ownership of creating your life the way you want to. And I also love the way how Wayne Dyer says that if you change the way you look at things, the things you look at change. So exactly in this book is how Mia started to change her way that she looks at things. And immediately things started to change within the book, within her life. And yes, as I said, you just captured all the basic principles of what relationships are really about within this book, and with the awesome twist in it as well.
Yes. thank you. When you first sent me that email after reading the book, saying that it describes what a good relationship is based on, and without the sugar coating, and breaks down the fantasy of what a relationship is, I was really touched, because when I was writing it, it was important to me. It's with all of my books, it's important to me to write about real people, real ordinary everyday people, and with our light side and our dark side, and the processes that we go through in managing things. And I was also really interested to be working with the concept of the hero's journey, because Joseph Campbell is the mythologist who observed that there is a common pattern to all the culture, all the myths and legends from different cultures around the world, of the hero's journey, where someone sets out from their ordinary world, from their comfort zone, to face a challenge or achieve something or overcome something. And in the process, they are both supported and challenged. And sometimes they're challenged to the death, you know, like it's very intense and confronting. And ultimately, they either succeed or they don't. But we are all in our different ways on a hero's journey. And I wanted to very deliberately work with those ideas. And so I sent my character Mia on a hero's journey adventure. Yes. Of course, in fact, yes. And so she starts to recognize the characteristics of the hero's journey, and is able to get some insights from that as well. And it was fun to work with all these ideas, that there's no greener grass, and relationships and communication and the hero's journey and all that, and just put it into entertainment, because that's my magic recipe, is entertainment, you know, fiction plus empowering and inspiring ideas. So I'm very delighted that you've enjoyed it and you'd like to recommend it to others. That's music to my ears.
Yes, and that's exactly what I got back to you on the first one, where I said I loved how you worked in Joseph Campbell's The Hero's Journey, how it's, even for me, as you asked in the previous question, how is it for me working as a relationship specialist? It was not only just a novel that I got swooped in and I can't stop reading. I just want to figure out what's going to happen with Mia. But it's also a book that was thought-provoking and kept me thinking and using it within my own life. So it's masterfully woven in there to not only be a novel, but also a personal development book to help you relate to this character and think through your own life, and also step into the honesty of where are you on your hero's journey? Where is it that you are standing, and what's the next courageous step that you need to take to move your life in the direction that you would like to move it in? So now I thoroughly enjoyed it, and that's why I'd say I'll use this book anytime, not just because it's a novel, but also because it's got very basic, awesome principles on personal development and relationship development.
Thank you. So I'm going to segue from that comment about the next courageous step and ask you, what would you offer to listeners who are experiencing some challenges in their relationship at the moment as being the next courageous step that they can take to resolve some differences or something like that?
So the best thing that you can do is to invest your time in your relationship. I always say to people, if you would like to retire, of course you're going to make sure that you've got an investment account somewhere and you're going to put away money. If you would like to retire with a partner, with someone specific, you also have to invest in that time. So for me, the biggest thing that a couple needs to do is to say that we are going to be committed to our relationship, to acknowledge that you do have a value on the relationship, to work on it. And then also to reach out to people that's there that really want to help people. The things that I can refer to is this novel, attending the Breakthrough Experience, doing one-on-one consultations with me or with any other relationship specialists, and doing the work and getting into a space. First of all, making the decision, almost like you had to make a decision. Are you moving on to a new relationship or not? First, make a decision. We are going to commit our time. And that decision needs to come from both parties within a relationship. It doesn't help that one wants to work and the other one doesn't want to work. And once you've made that decision, commit to time where and when. Make it specific. Write down a time where and when are you going to work on it and how are you going to work on it. And as soon as you've got your plan on where is your specific time that you set aside to invest in your relationship, then start investing in that relationship. It's almost like when you go through, well, me coming from South Africa, we are quite familiar with recessions. So it's almost like when you know that it's going to be economically bad time, you had to have saved up a little bit to still keep afloat. And that's the same with a relationship. We know that there's going to be challenges within our relationship. And to make sure that you've got the savings added up so that your relationship can go through that dip. And that saving doesn't come from just throwing in a amount of time at one specific or just when the crisis hits. It's not going to be worthwhile to try and only put the time in then. Of course, there's solutions to when there's a crisis. But if you really want to make it through a crisis, you need to have savings within that in that relationship. And that takes a daily basis of investing within your relationship and taking the time to allow and love each other unconditionally for who they are and yourself. So that's the second piece of advice that I would give to people is the more you grow yourself, the more your partner becomes the person that you actually love. If you grow, you will see how your partner grows as well. So, yeah, that's what I would love.
I was going to ask you then, because that's a brilliant answer in terms of when both couples do want to resurrect the relationship, but when there's only one who wants to and the other one doesn't, you know, how do you manage that sort of dynamic? And you just were beginning to say there that when you do the work on yourself, that will often create a change in the other person.
Yes, that's one of the other common things that I get is one person come to me and they say, can you please just talk to my partner? I need you to say to them, they are doing this and this and this wrong and all of that. And that's the place where I love to say to them, so you're the one that came to me. I'm going to work with you. I'm not going to work with a partner. The person that comes to me is the one that I'm going to work with. So if it's only one person, that's the place where I love to help someone to say, imagine if you keep on battering at your partner and say to them, you have to change this, you need to change that. They're not going to feel loved, or they're not going to feel that they're in a space where they would like to be themselves. They're going to keep on hiding things from you because they're getting criticized for who they are. So if you keep on battering them and trying to change them, that's not going to help them to change. But if you go and work on your things, and you work on yourself and you show them how much the work has done for you and how you transformed your life, that's actually going to inspire them to go and do the same within their own life. And that's the best way that I found to help partners to change, to motivate someone from the outside and tell them, you must go do this, you have to go do this, we have to go change on this and this. That doesn't really get you anywhere. But if you as a person decide, okay, let me do as much as I can, let me change myself, or let me work on the things, even not change things within yourself, just transform it and get to love yourself as you are, you create a space for your partner to go love themselves for exactly who they are. So that's the best way to help someone, to become your most empowered self. That is inspiring people to become their best self. If you think like we love to surround people that's inspiring. If it's someone that's draining and depro, we don't like to be around them. So that's not the people we're going to surround ourselves by. But if you see someone like they're inspired about what they're doing and they can't stop talking about how much they've learned and what they change and things like that, then you'd love to be around them to learn from them. And that's the same within a relationship. If you are that person for your partner, if you're someone that they would love to be around with, that's actually the best thing that you can give to them, because that's going to inspire them to go out and want to grow within themselves as well.
Well, for anyone who would like to learn more from you, what is your website, Carla?
Yes, people are welcome to contact me at www.carlavanbiljon, and that's Carla with a K, .com. And I'm sure you can email me as well. It's vanbiljon.carla@yahoo.co.za. And I'd love to help people with either one-on-one sessions or couple sessions, whatever you find challenging within your relationship, I'm there to help.
Thank you. Can we just check the spelling of your surname again for people who aren't aware? So it's Carla with a K, and then Fun is V-A-N, Billion, and B-I-L-J-O-N, correct?
Yes, that's it. Yes, that's correct. So, thank you.
So CarlaFunBillion.com. No, .co.za, is that right?
For the email address, it's funbillioncarla@yahoo.co.za, and then the website is carlafunbillion.com.
I combined them. All right, so carlafunbillion.com. Thank you. It's been lovely.
Thanks, Lillian.
Exchanging thoughts about relationships. I suspect we might speak again sometime in the future and perhaps go more deeply into some of those challenges in relationships and how to address them.
Yes, and thank you so much to you. Thank you for the opportunity to be able to read that wonderful book and also go through my own journey as I read it, and to have something now to give to people within relationships to start relating to a new type of way of looking at relationships and a framework from where they can work. And thank you for this conversation. Thanks so much for the opportunity to chat what I love about. And I really hope that we get the opportunity to speak more, because I think there's so many things we haven't even touched on, what's the most common issues people have in relationships and how to handle them and what they can do. So I'm sure we'll get to almost like a series on relationships from this one.
Absolutely. All right. Well, we will speak again. Thank you for your time and for sharing your wisdom. And I hope listeners will explore your work and my work. My website is liliangrace.com. That's LiliangraceE.com for my book, Wanted Greener Grass, or some of my other books for the conscious family. Lots there for youth as well. Thank you.